Our gospel lesson is from John chapter 2, verses 13 through 22. And I'm reading from the New Revised Standard Version, updated edition. This is John 2, starting at verse 13. The Passover of the Jews was near, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple, he found people selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and the money changers seated at their tables. Making a whip of cords, he drove all of them out of the temple with the sheep and the cattle. He also poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. He told those who were selling the doves, "Take these things out of here. Stop making my father's house a marketplace." His disciples remembered that it was written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." The religious authorities then said to him, "What sign can you show for doing this?" And Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." The religious leaders then said, "This temple has been under construction for 46 years, and will you raise it up in 3 days?" But he was speaking of the temple of his body. After he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this, and they believed the scripture and the word that Jesus had spoken. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I'm going to begin with a question, and I ask you to reflect honestly for a second. But has there ever been anything in a worship service that made you angry? Maybe it was a last-minute change in the order of service. Maybe it was a hymn that you have never particularly liked. Maybe you felt like the pastor was being too political. Or maybe you felt like the pastor wasn't being political enough. Or maybe someone said something inappropriate during the joys and concerns, and you couldn't quite get over it. It kind of made you angry. There may be times, and have been times through the years, where something happened in worship that made you angry. A related question to that is, do you think you ever made someone angry during a worship service? Maybe by something that you said during the passing of the peace, or maybe because you overlooked someone during the passing of the peace. Maybe you said something inappropriate to a visitor. Can you think of a moment when you might have made someone angry in worship? I remember preaching a sermon as a seminary intern during a Saturday night service. And there was a man in the pews who was squirming very uncomfortably. And I had a feeling that something I had said made him mad, but I didn't know what it was. I didn't think that my sermon was particularly controversial, but he was squirming. And then sure enough, after the worship service, he shook his hand and he said, "I'm going to be praying for you this week." And there are times when someone says, "I'm going to be praying for you," and it feels like it's coming from a place of genuine concern and love and well-being. And there are other times when someone says, "I'm praying for you," and it sounds like they're saying that you did something wrong. "I'm going to pray this week that God fixes you." It kind of felt like that. I almost said, "I'll be praying for you too," but I didn't. And then the next week, I prayed before the sermon, I prepared it, I preached, and this time he sat in the pews with kind of a neutral expression, occasionally nodding his head, and then after the worship service, he said, "My prayers are answered," and he didn't say anything more. And to this day, I cannot tell you what was really all that different about the second sermon from the first sermon. But there are moments when you know that you've made someone angry. I also remember doing a funeral service once. And I was warned about an estranged son. And sure enough, during the funeral service, the estranged son showed up, and he just stood in the doorway. never coming in to sit down, but just stood there. And I had no idea what was going to happen. But I could feel years of anger and tension, and I didn't know what else. But you know it acutely when someone is angry during worship. But I must admit, I've never had someone come into a worship service and sit down and very patiently start making a whip. That would have made me really nervous. But that's what Jesus does in the Gospel of John. Jesus sits down and he starts making a whip out of cords, taking the time to painstakingly make the whip. I mean, if Jesus came here and did that, I mean, can you imagine what might happen next? What is he going to drive out? Like, what is he going to object to in our worship service? It would drive me crazy wondering about that. But in today's story, Jesus is angry. And this is one of those stories that makes it into all four Gospels. And when that happens, you sense that this must have been an important story for the early church, because it did make it into all four Gospels. And in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the chasing the money changers out of the temple happens during Holy Week. And you get this sense that it's somewhat impulsive. Jesus comes in and immediately drives them out, and he says, "You've turned my Father's house, or the temple, into a den of thieves." And the money changers, they were important because of this. In order to purchase animals for the temple sacrifices, you had to have a coin that didn't have a graven image on it because of the first commandment. You shall have no God but God. You shall not make any graven images. And so you could not pay the temple tax with a coin that had Caesar's likeness on it. And so you had to exchange it for shekels, which didn't have any human likeness. And you could then use the shekels to purchase the animals for the temple sacrifices. But apparently the money changers were charging a huge, huge markup for changing the coins with Caesar's likeness into the shekels. And this made Jesus angry. And he said, "You've turned the temple into a den of thieves." Now in John, the story happens not during Holy Week, but near the very beginning of the gospel. And Jesus doesn't say that you've turned the temple into a den of thieves. He makes his critique more broad. He says the temple is not a marketplace, as if you're not supposed to be exchanging Roman coins for shekels at all, or conducting any kind of business. And some people wonder if the gospel writer and Jesus have in mind here a verse from the very end of Zechariah. The last chapter of Zechariah talks about all the things that will happen when the day of the Lord is finally near. And one of the things that will happen is that the temple will no longer be a marketplace. And so maybe Jesus is saying, "I've arrived. This is my moment. You don't have to trade with money anymore in God's house." Maybe something like that is what Jesus means. But it's a lot more broad in the Gospel of John. And Jesus makes himself the focus. Even in that little conversation about the temple, Jesus says, "Tear down the temple and it'll be raised up again in 3 days. And those hearing say, "What? This temple has been a 46-year-long project, and you're going to raise it up again in 3 days? But Jesus was referring to the temple of his body. And so Jesus was trying to direct the focus back on him. And for Christians, Jesus is the one who shows us what God is like. Jesus is the one who models what it's like to love God with all our hearts, and to truly love our neighbors as ourselves, no exceptions. And according to the late Presbyterian pastor John Buchanan, in the Bible there's this kind of running argument between God and organized religion. God creates life, God gives life, God's people are called to love God with all abandon, with all their heart, mind, strength, and soul, and to love their neighbors as themselves. And it's that simple, or it ought to be that simple. But over time, we develop rituals to help us remember the stories, to help us remember God's commandments. And the rituals are supposed to help us express our gratitude. They're supposed to give us the tools that we need for a disciplined life, the tools that we need for spiritual growth. But sometimes a shift happens where somehow the rituals and the rules become more important than the deeper point, and we lose sight of what the rules were there for to begin with. Like when you insist that a hungry person cannot be fed on the Sabbath. Really? Is humankind made for the Sabbath as if the Sabbath were the ultimate God? Or was the Sabbath a gift to people for structuring their week? And if you think that any rule of God means that you can't feed hungry people, you're not understanding the rule correctly. It's not what Jesus would do. Jesus would feed those who are hungry. And even in the Old Testament, God would send prophets to remind people what the point was of all the rituals. For example, I desire steadfast love and not sacrifice, the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings. That's from Hosea. And Amos puts it very bluntly in a passage that we heard this fall. I despise your feast. I take no delight in your solemn assemblies. But let justice roll down like water and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. The prophets were always angry because God was angry whenever our worship was disconnected from our ethics. If we talked about love and peace and justice on a Sunday, but led lives that were completely incongruent with that the rest of the week, this is something that made God and the prophets angry. And Martin Luther King Jr. loved that passage from Amos about justice rolling down like water and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. And one of his favorite New Testament stories was this story about Jesus chasing the money changers out of the temple. And King saw this as an example of nonviolent civil disobedience. That when people lose sight of what the rules were there to begin with, or when people use the rules to take advantage of others, to gouge others, to discriminate against others, this is something that angers God. And we have every right to rise up in nonviolent, righteous anger. Again, anger that is not seeking revenge or to destroy someone else, but a kind of anger that seeks to put things right. And the challenge for us as a church is always to remember that the church is not about itself. It's not about religion for the sake of religion. For the Christian, it's about Christ. And Christ comes to startle us, to challenge us, to awaken us to true life. He comes and makes detached neutrality impossible, particularly when people are suffering, when people need to hear good news, and people need to experience love that has so often been denied them. And Jesus comes to you and to me and invites us to follow. And Jesus comes to the sanctuary of our own hearts and our minds and invites us to follow, to learn. To learn what it means in our own lives to make Jesus the focus. All glory and praise be to our God. Amen.